beans, couch potatoes across the country and around the world on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about Black Panther, Early Man, Samson, The Monkey King 3, and the 1517 to Paris. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and the home cinema roundup featuring a look back at Spawn. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First of all, thank you, Hollywood, for taking a break from all the sexual indiscretions and misconduct allegations that I can actually talk about something else in the news for once. But the thing I want to talk about now is sort of the hype that's been leading up to this week's big release, which is Black Panther. This reminds me a little bit of the hype leading up to and following Wonder Woman, where Wonder Woman, people were going bonkers because they're like, it's a woman's movie. It's a woman's movie directed by a woman, starring a woman. And it just, people were just going overboard on it. And nothing against Wonder Woman. I thought it was a fine superhero movie, but it was not best of the year. And there were certainly some problems with it. And I feel the same way with Black Panther, because the narrative going around in the media, and it's really pervasive in the online film, Twitter, woke media, that this is groundbreaking. And it is to a degree, because Black Panther is the first, well, it's not even the first black superhero in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's very limited group of films, because you have War Machine, which became the Iron Patriot, played by Don Cheadle. You have Falcon, who's played by Anthony Mackie. So this is not the first time a black person has put on a rubber suit and joined the fight, even in this little universe. But it is the first headlining of a black character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But speaking to the point, everyone wants to make this as groundbreaking as possible. And yes, it has a predominantly black cast, mainly because most of the movie literally takes place in Africa. So there's going to be a lot of black people there. It's directed by Ryan Coogler, who's a black guy. And it's not like they just plucked him out of nowhere. I mean, he'd done big movies. He did Creed. And he did Fruitvale Station, which was a much smaller movie, but got a lot of award buzz. And that's why you see Michael B. Jordan showing up in the movie, because he was in both those films. But I think this all came to a head when Salon sent out a tweet leaking to their story about the hype of Black Panther, which, by the way, that I actually never went to the actual article, because when I finally went there, they changed it to the Black Panther reviews are in and here's what they say. So they kind of downplay their own story. But on their Twitter feed, they introduced this article by saying, quote, "It is the first blockbuster format release featuring a black hero front and center." And, you know, with good reason, people kind of jumped all over them for that, because they're like, okay, now just hold on a second. Not even the first black superhero movie. I mean, what about Blade or Spawn from the 90s? Blade was played by Wesley Snipes and Spawn was played by Michael Jai White. And what about Catwoman? People forget about Catwoman because it was a terrible movie, but it was still a big blockbuster superhero film back in 2004. In fact, the first two movies I ever reviewed on the radio were Catwoman and I, Robot. Both of these featured a black person in the central front and center role. And speaking of Will Smith, what about his entire career? Everything from Bad Boys to Hancock and Men in Black in between Independence Day, everything he's done. He was a black guy featured front and center. He was the biggest box office draw of the 2000s and the 90s. And then you had other people like Eddie Murphy in the past. You had Chris Tucker. I mean, what about Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan and all three Rush Hour movies? Massive blockbusters with a huge push behind them. They weren't superheroes, but, you know, they were blockbuster format releases. And like I said, this reminds me of how the narrative of Wonder Woman got ahead of themselves, forgetting about the aforementioned Catwoman, forgetting about Elektra. And yeah, it was different because it was the big DC movie, but let's not have your narrative get in the way of the facts. And I also saw a report, you know, this goes back to this hype for Black Panther, which it's worthy hype for some of it. But some of it is just people just jumping on the bandwagon for clicks and likes. I saw a report, and it was on Screen Rant, that says Black Panther is having, quote, the biggest opening day box office in the UK so far in 2018. And I said, hold on a second. It's the middle of February. We have had exactly six other weeks in 2018. And that's it. And even then, most of the movies in January were not going to be big hits. It's all carryover. It was all like Jumanji and Star Wars for the first couple weeks. So you don't have that opening day. The non-opening day was going to be really good. You know what the former record holder was before Black Panther broke it? It was 50 Shades Freed last week with 2.66 million pounds. And Black Panther had 2.67 million pounds. And that's a great opening day bid in the UK, but it's hardly this huge leap. It's like a third of a percent. And it's off a really awful underplaying movie anyway. So do we really want to make that comparison in the first place? It's going to get blown away later on. So, you know, dial back on the hype. I know everybody wants to be part of the woke narrative, but everything's not what people are trying to portray. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Overboard, starring Anna Faris, opens on April 13th.
He is the devil. I owe the cleaning company $3,000 and they fired me. Rich people, they get away with everything.
I don't know what day it is. I don't even know my own name.
Amnesia in our little town.
That's him. I have an idea that is poetic in its justice. I'm here to pick up my husband.
You ruined my wife?
For better or worse, baby.
Watch me! How come they don't look like me?
We had to use a sperm donor.
I'm sterile.
You know, I'd never seen the original Overboard with Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell. My sister was a huge fan, and I remember she had a copy of the film on VHS, and she just loved it, and she'd watch it all the time. And it seems like a charming little movie. I mean, it's direct, the original was directed by Gary Marshall, and he had some flops on his hand, but he had some good stuff. And, this one, they switched the roles. In the original, Goldie Hawn was this super rich woman who gets amnesia. Whereas in this one, Gino Derbez, who, you know, people don't know him by name, but he is the guy, he was in that, Instructions Not Included. He was also in Geostorm. He's a very well-known Hispanic actor and apparently was a big TV actor, and he's kind of made this crossover into American films. And he's done Spanish language films for the Spanish language market in America that have done extremely well. But he plays the wealthy guy who falls off the ship and loses his memory. So this looks kind of cute. I'm kind of looking forward to it. The other trailer this week I want to hit is Skyscraper, opens on July 13th.
Is your family enjoying their stay?
Very much so. They're shocked you gave us the entire floor.
After your security assessment, what do you think of the building?
The Pearl is the tallest, most advanced building in the world. You've built a vertical city, but you've brought with it every single safety and security challenge that I could think of. Not only have you brought them all indoors, but you've trapped them 240 floors in the air. No one really knows what would happen if things go wrong.
Daddy! Tell me, how much do you love your family?
This is, of course, Dwayne Johnson's big blockbuster. It's a version of Die Hard, I guess. And, this looks fine for a big summer blockbuster. I can get behind this. It was weird seeing Neve Campbell playing his wife, because I don't picture her as old as she is. But, I mean, she's the appropriate age for that. I haven't seen her in a while in a movie. But yeah, this looks good, except in the trailer. If you watch the full trailer, I think you see the ending, which I always hate that in a trailer. It's on the poster. Like, one of the big ending moments is on the poster, and you're like, there's your surprise. You know, it's like the Planet of the Apes, have the Statue of Liberty standing there in the Planet of the Apes poster. Well, thank you. That was the end of the film. That's the big surprise. Anyways, Skyscraper looks like it might be an enjoyable throwaway action movie. It does sort of feel like it's hearkening back to the 80s and 90s with its style. And that is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Early Man and The Monkey King 3. Because we can, can! Uh-oh. 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 Uh-oh.
Thank you.
and welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move into the movie reviews. Let's start off with Early Man. A group of cavemen face off against warriors from the Bronze Age in a soccer match to save their home.
Let's game commence!
We challenge the champions!
A caveman?
A caveman?
A caveman!
You took our home. If we win, you leave my tribe in peace.
You think you can beat Rael Bronzio? I can help.
If we play this game and beat them at it, we can have our valley back.
This is done by Aardman Animation, and if you're not familiar with them, you've probably seen their stuff, or you might recognize what they do. They did the film Shaun the Sheep a couple years ago. They did Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, and of course, all the little Wallace and Gromit shorts and the Shaun the Sheep TV show in Britain. They did movies like Chicken Run and Flushed Away, and they have a very unique style, almost a Simpsons looking face with the big mouths and bite overbites in the teeth. And they're very distinct and very charming style. It's stop motion, which I love. I always have loved animation, and I love the artistry in there. And in particular, this kind of rustic claymation, there's an organic charm to it that you don't get with CGI. I mean, CGI is great, and the Pixar movies are fantastic, and you know, I've seen lots of CGI movies that look good. This is an old standard, but people aren't used to this animation anymore, so sometimes that slows people from watching it. But I remember I loved Shaun the Sheep. It was one of my favorites of the year, and I loved Wallace and Gromit, one of my favorites of the year. This one's not going to be my favorite of the year. This one isn't as good as those. It's not as charming as those, but it's still cute. And what I find so interesting about it is when I first... I covered the trailer about a month or two ago on the show here, and I remember watching the trailer, and I never got the sense that they were playing soccer. And I went back and watched the trailer and in preparing for this, and I'm like, oh, I guess it's in there. But they really downplay the soccer in this movie, or football. You know, they call it football in the movie because it's British, and you know, it's not people on a gridiron. You're on the pitch. I found it interesting how little money Summit and Lionsgate have spent trying to promote this movie. It's coming in under the shadow of Black Panther, but it would serve as fantastic counter-programming. But there's something about the soccer that I think terrifies marketers in America. Because and it's not that soccer isn't popular. There's fans of soccer in America. Every kid at some point has played soccer almost. Much more than peewee football, because peewee football, you gotta get all the gear and stuff. In soccer, you gotta get shin pads and shoes, and that's it. Americans aren't so stupid that they can't understand and wrap their brain around soccer. But they do kind of avoid it in the trailer, where it's very pervasive in the film. And that's okay, because that's what the film's about. It reminds me of that movie, The Big Year, that came out 7 or 8 years ago, I think. It's been a while. And that was the one with Steve Martin and Owen Wilson and Jack Black. And they were all competing in The Big Year, which is a birding tournament, which is more commonly known as bird watching. But that's apparently not the correct term. Kind of like you calling somebody a bird watcher is like calling a Star Trek fan a Trekkie. They want to be called Trekkers. Yeah. So you're getting into all the political correctness of what the fans want to call themselves. But in the movie, The Big Year, the trailers cut anything out of birds at all. It was just about these three friends competing against each other, but they didn't tell why. But then when you watch the movie, it's totally about birding. And in that sense, it's kind of a charming little film. I liked the movie. It's just, it was so mismarketed because somebody at the studio was like, oh, we can't mention birds at all because it just freaks people out. And I think that's the way it was with this movie and soccer. They're like, well, we're just going to say it's these whimsical. Oh yeah, we're going to show some soccer, but we don't want people to think it's all about soccer when it kind of is. But that's okay. It's cute. It's not the best thing that Aardman's done. But it still is a completely whimsically fun and absurd movie about the Stone Age meeting the Bronze Age, which does happen. You know, it's a much better film than, say, 10,000 BC. Remember that horrible movie? Or even Apocalypto, which was the Mel Gibson film about the Mayan civilization clashing with this Stone Age tribe. One, there's a lot less violence in this one than, say, Apocalypto or 10,000 BC, which was, that was a Roland Emmerich movie. This is not an idea that's never been done before, although it's never been a hugely popular idea. But this is cute. Here's the thing. If you like animation and if you want to see something a little bit different than what you're normally going to get spoon-fed through Netflix series and movies, this one's kind of fun. It's cute. It's not going to be best of the year, but it still works. It kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Monkey King 3. I don't have a trailer for this because it's in Chinese. In this third installment of the adaptation of the ancient Chinese novel Journey to the West, a Buddhist monk and his disciples stumble upon a land inhabited and ruled by women. I know, this should have been come out like last year when Wonder Woman came out, because every culture seems to have a story of a land or an island where women are in total control and they rule the town or the city. And this is the Chinese version of it. Now, the Journey of the West, I've not read it. I mean, I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not that well-versed. I'm not that educated. But it is a classic Chinese novel, one of the first Chinese novels. And this is the third in the series. So they've done these sort of fantasy films. And they're fun and they're silly and they're whimsical at times. They're very Chinese, but they're cool to watch. I mean, they've got some neat special effects and you've got the different characters interacting with other spirits. Like there's a character in this that's a river god that they encounter and they battle at times. And it's neat. What's neat about watching a movie like this is it is so fully through and through Chinese. So you get something very authentically from a different country, which broadens the mind. You know, watching Jackie Chan movies that he did when he was in America does not give you a look into the Chinese culture. This isn't heavy and it's not overdone. It runs a little long, but it's kind of big concept and it has some cool effects and it has some very funny moments. There's an interesting moment in there where the guys they go into this river, this like fertility river, and they get pregnant and they have to go try to get, they call it the miscarriage, but it's basically an abortion. So these like weirdly swerve into the abortion discussion but it's completely told from a Chinese and Buddhist perspective, which is fascinating to watch because it's almost like they're talking about it. And they reference Buddha and you feel like Buddha's going to walk in and go, guys, I'm not owning this. Just so it has this weird moment in there that it seems somewhat kind of a throwaway discussion, which would have been a huge dog whistle in America, but it's part of the culture. I don't know if it's part of the original story or not, but no. So it has some neat cultural aspects to it. And plus it's a fun little movie. It's cute and clever and it kind of can work as a kid's movie aside from this weird abortion discussion in the middle of it. So ultimately, I'm going to say The Monkey King 3 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Black Panther and Samson. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with our movie reviews with the film that's going to be the big one for the weekend. It's huge. It's going to be massive. And that is Black Panther. Or as I had a radio host tweet out I was going to be on the show talking about it, they called it Blank Panther. And I was like, did Samuel L. Jackson make the title a little more colorful and blue than it needed to be? No, so it was a typo, but Black Panther, I think it's even funnier. Maybe Blank Man. Hey, there's another black superhero that nobody has talked about in this whole discussion. Blank Man, played by Damon Wayans back in early 90s. Anyways, in Black Panther, Wakanda's Prince T'Challa returns home to become king, but a forgotten rival from his past steps up to challenge him for the throne.
My son, it is your time.
Show me my respect and bow down.
You get to decide what kind of king you are going to be. Don't freeze.
I never freeze.
I waited my entire life for this. The world's gonna start over. I'ma burn it all.
We're now into, I think, like phase three with Marvel. And what's neat about the way Marvel has structured things is it started out with just very basic origin stories or background stories. But they forewent the Incredible Hulk, because just 5 years before they made that one, there was the Ang Lee Hulk. Everybody knows how the Hulk got to be the Hulk. But you had origins for Iron Man and Captain America. And then it went big with the Avengers, and then they started really kind of spinning off and thinking outside of the box. And some of the stuff, ever since the second wave with Guardians of the Galaxy, I mean, they said, hey, let's take a tree and a raccoon and a couple other people, throw them together and make a movie. Oh, that will make that work. And they did. And now Marvel is thinking completely outside of the box. I mean, Thor Ragnarok is out there. You couldn't have made Thor Ragnarok 10 years ago when this whole thing started. I think people wouldn't have been able to wrap their brain around it. But people are so familiar with the characters in the universe and how everything fits together, you can do some outside-of-the-box stuff. And I mean, this isn't as out-of-the-box as like Guardians of the Galaxy or Thor Ragnarok is, but it's sort of outside-of-the-box the way, say, Doctor Strange is. I don't think you could have made the Doctor Strange movie back in 2008. Now, Black Panther is a character that's been around since the 60s in Marvel Comics, named for the actual Black Panther. It has nothing to do with the Black Panther political party. And it's notable, again, not because it's the first black superhero, because we've had several of those, the headline movies. And it's not even the first black superhero in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it's the first one who gets his own movie. And it's directed by Ryan Coogler, who is a well-known director, and it also has a predominantly black cast. Now, that's not because it's, like, you know, most Tyler Perry movies have a predominantly black cast, but those are limited experience kitchen sink drama slash comedies. But it's great to see a movie that features black characters with black actors and a black director that's not about drug dealers or criminals or the ghetto or a Madea movie, that kind of thing. I mean, it's nice to just see a movie. Oh, and yeah, and the cast happens to be predominantly black, mainly because most of the movie takes place in Wakanda. And they go to, like, South Korea at some point. There's, like, two scenes that take place in the U.S. And they have one scene in England. And but most of it takes place in the borders of Wakanda. It takes place in Africa. So, of course, you're going to have there's a lot of black people in Africa. So it's not out of place, and it's not overly progressive filmmaking to put a predominantly black cast. And that's kind of cool. And they got some great people behind it. Chadwick Boseman's okay. His accent's a little goofy, and I've always felt his accent. He's done some goofy accents in the past. But the real surprising one is Michael B. Jordan as the bad guy in it. And he was in Creed, and he was in Fruitvale Station. But I think this guy could be a fantastic, formidable villain more than he couldn't be a hero. He could make a career out of this. You've got a great supporting cast of people like Forrest Whitaker, and Sterling K. Brown shows up. You've got Lupita Nyong'o. It's great to see Lupita Nyong'o in a movie where she is not a CGI character, because she was in Star Wars, and she was in The Jungle Book. I'm like, put her on screen. She's a beautiful woman. She's fantastic as an actress. And I mean, she can do the physicality, and she does it in this movie. And I just think it's good to see her headlining a film and being on the poster and not being a CGI character on the poster. And you got, like, Angela Bassett in the movie. They got some great actors in the film, and they hold their own. Now, the story is about, it's basically a power struggle for Wakanda, which is, it's this fictional country where they got this mineral resource of vibranium, which is basically the stuff they make Captain America's shield out of. But they have tons of it, but they hide as a third world country. They hide all their technology so they're not invaded, basically. There's a history of poorer nations, if you have a resource, that's actually sometimes a curse, because you get warlords and oligarchs who come in and basically raid for the resource and enrich themselves, but the people of the land never get the money. But they do this a little differently. And it's a good, solid action movie. It's exactly what you'd expect from a Marvel movie. It's got the humor. It's got the camaraderie. It's got the action. And the other thing it's not, yeah, it has some stuff you can divine stuff out of it politically. Cause of course, Michael B. Jordan's character grew up in Oakland. And so you're dealing with certain levels of political things that you can pick and choose if you really want to find, say, oh, but it's not an overly political movie. None of the Marvel films are. And that's kind of what makes it good. It's just a good, solid movie, and it doesn't spend its time drawing attention to itself as being, hey, we're a black movie. It just is. And that's, I think, what you need. You need a movie that just is. And it does it very, very well. It's everything you want from a Marvel movie, from the action to the humor to the characters to the cast to the effects. It's perfect for leading on, and it's leading us into Infinity War, which is good. This is going to be a huge year for Marvel. Which every year kind of is. So I'm going to say Black Panther totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about Samson. The biblical story of Samson and Delilah is told in an epic style for the big screen.
Samson, chosen by the living God to be his hand of vengeance. It's his will.
It is not mine.
Who is this God who gives you such strength?
Three vows were bestowed upon me. No wine, no touching the dead, no cutting of my hair.
You find me the secret of his power,
my Delilah.
This wasn't screened for critics. Not a big surprise, partly because it looks like it's a smaller film. It's produced by PureFlix, which does a lot of these faith-based films. And they've sometimes broken through the faith-based movies. You know, movies like Miracles from Heaven or Heaven is for Real. Those are sort of like moderately mainstream films. And PureFlix involves itself in those kind of movies. And this one, though, first of all, the Samson story is not the beloved story that everybody tells it. And it's weird. I think they're timing it to be during the lead up to Easter, because, you know, we just had Ash Wednesday. We're in the middle of Lent, and we're going to have Easter here in less than 40 days. So I think they're trying to spin off of that, and they're trying to get some traction with that. But it's an Old Testament story, and it looks a little cheesy. The guy who plays Samson comes off as incredibly cheesy, almost a Kellan Lutz kind of cheesy, at least in the trailers. And the woman who plays Delilah is gorgeous. But then, you know, it's Delilah, you know, vixen of the Bible. And, it looks like it hits the point. It hits the moments, but it looks like it might be just kind of like a glorified TV movie. That just ends up hitting the theaters. But, yeah, I think they're going to do the push to the faith-based crowd. But generally, the Old Testament stuff doesn't do as well as the New Testament stuff. When you talk about the faith-based stuff, it's got to involve Jesus to get butts in the seats. So we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening at the end of the weekend. But I have to say, it gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it.
It sucks.
That's it for the segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about finally the 1517 to Paris, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring a look back at Spawn.
Stop it now.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. One final one is the 1517 to Paris. I didn't cover it last week, and as I talked about it on the show, there were no screenings. I think the closest screening to me was like 300 miles away. And then they didn't do Thursday night previews, which is troubling. So I wanted to make a point to see it and review it because I actually have been getting some questions about it. So now's my chance to review the 1517 to Paris. The story of a thwarted terrorist attack on a train to Paris is told featuring the men who actually lived through the event.
Once you begin to discover who you are, then you really realize how you have been given authority over your life. But you can only do that through the struggle of life. And most people avoid the struggle. Most people go through life avoiding pain.
I don't know, man. You ever just feel like life is just pushing us towards something? Like some greater purpose?
I hate being right all the time. If you recall, last week I was talking about the 1517 to Paris, and I said I think Clint Eastwood is a great director, but the idea of casting the guys who were in the original event was probably a mistake, and I referred to the movie Act of Valor, which was a film that they cast real Navy SEALs in a movie about Navy SEALs. And the Navy SEALs, when they were Navy SEALing, they were great. They were very authentic because they're the SEALs. It was when they were at home and they're talking to their wives and they're having their dialogue moments and their friends moments. They just aren't actors, and that's okay because you're Navy SEALs. You don't have to be an actor. And that's the way it was with these guys in the 1517 to Paris. I take no issue with the men who are involved in this, but they're not actors. And it's abundantly clear when you watch the movie. Now, when they have the replay of the attack when it went down and the struggles, they're great in it and they're very authentic in that moment. But the problem is that event was like 15 minutes. I'd say the bulk of the film, like an hour of the movie, is about their lives and what went on in their development of growing up. And the two of them went and joined the military and what happened with them and at their home life and what they were doing in Europe in the first place, because they're on a backpacking trip and they kind of all met in Amsterdam, and then they took this train. And then even like 20 to 30 minutes of it is just them tooling around Europe. And it's this weird, almost hands-off travelogue. And then it just gets really upset because there's no story to it. You know, Sully was the last Clint Eastwood movie he did. And there's some very interesting parallels between this and 1517. Both of them are about an event that took about 10 minutes. And both of them feature real American heroes. And both of them actually have this movie that sort of tells in a broken time the events that happened. But the thing is, with Sully, you had... Not only did you have Tom Hanks headlining the cast, and he's a brilliant actor, but the movie, Sully, wasn't about really the Miracle on the Hudson. It was about the aftermath of it and what it did to Sully and how he was dealing with guilt and remorse and questioning his actions and how he was being partly targeted by the FAA. Was it his fault? That sort of thing. And so that was actually a really... interesting part, and Tom Hanks could carry that. I would not have, the original Sully, I would not have expected him to be good at that at all. And like I said, so the movie Sully is not really about the event, it's about all the stuff that goes on after it, or leading up to it as well. And that's the same thing with 1517 to Paris. The difference is you have these guys who aren't actors, and it's okay that they can't act. And that just makes it really tough to get through, because it was a slag at times. I mean, it's about as subtle as a sledgehammer, almost trying to kowtow, and the script is basically pandering to sort of that middle American audience. There's like a scene where the parents, the single moms, two of them, Jenna Fischer and Judy Greer, playing their moms, and they go into a middle school conference. And the teacher is just the worst. She's like, oh, your kids are terrible, and they just are distracted, and they need to be on medication, and they need to be on ADD, they got ADD because they keep staring out the window and they can't focus. And the moms get all like white trashy, indignant with like, my God's bigger than your medicine. And no, I'm not going to, you tell me to medicate my child. I'm just like, what is happening? First of all, my wife's a teacher. I know for a fact how this stuff works in a school, and it doesn't work that way. It may appear to work that way to the parents and the kids, but there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through. And here's the reality. There's a lot of people out there whose kids probably do need medication, or at the very least, a visit to the doctor. And there's nothing wrong with it. You tell your kid, oh my gosh, this kid looks like he's got high blood sugar. He might have type 1 diabetes. Well, I'm not going to medicate my kid. He needs insulin or he's going to die. Why is that any different than your son is having serious trouble focusing? There's medication, there's treatments, and that sort of thing you may want to consider. I'm not medicating my kid. Well, you're going to medicate your kid if he's got diabetes, or you should. Generally, if a school officially suggests that you have your kid at least go to a doctor and be looked at, 99% of the time they're right. Because they have to jump through so many hoops just to get to the point where they can officially suggest that to you. So, I mean, like, from the beginning of this movie, it's completely ill-informed with how schools work. And when you watch the movie, you're like, yeah, these kids kind of were... This kid was distracted and had focus issues. Now it all worked out that he, and it's great that he was on that train and saved people. But that doesn't negate any sort of flaws in his upbringing. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way the world is. But I don't know, I digress. The whole point is 1517 to Paris. It's a great story, a great event of American heroism. Shouldn't have been told by the heroes. So I'm going to have to say 1517 to Paris just doesn't hold up as a movie. It kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office really quick. Now I mean, I'm not even going to talk about potential box office for Black Panther. I'm hearing numbers anywhere from $120 to $180 million going into the weekend. I don't know how much this movie's going to make. But look, if we come out on Monday or Tuesday... And the 3-day is less than 200 million. Don't like suddenly start selling your shares in Marvel. There's a lot of wiggle room in what a great number would be. So last week you had 50 Shades Freed, didn't even make $40 million, which is not good for the series. I mean, it's still going to make money because it's a cheap series to make and there's no big stars in it really. But, you know, it's way down from the other ones. I'd be surprised if this thing cracks 80 million, let alone 100 million. And then the 1517 to Paris did play kind of soft. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week I want to kind of open the vaults and look back at an old title, Spawn, which came out in the late 90s, 1997. Based on Todd McFarlane's comic, this story follows a dead mercenary who returns from the grave with the powers of the underworld, only to use them for good against an international madman.
We have harvested the ultimate weapon. Makes the Ebola virus look like a skin rash.
Congrats, your freaking laces. I say destroy the cosmos. Ask questions later.
Who are you?
This is just what they want. You're playing their game.
Then I'll play dirty.
You've been violated, girly man.
Use your armor.
Now stay sharp. The night is young.
Now, I remember watching this movie back in 1997. I actually went and saw it in the summer with a friend of mine. He was visiting from out of town. And I liked it back then. I mean, it was in the context of 1997, it was enjoyable. Watching it today, it just reeks of the 90s. And not in a good way. I mean, Michael Jai White as Spawn, he's good. I think he holds his own, actually. He does a good job in the movie. But the special effects. It wasn't until Star Wars in 1999 and The Matrix, the two of those kind of redefined special effects and said, oh, no. Just because you have these digital things, you got to actually still produce some sort of photorealism quality. You know, in the late 90s, like movies like Species and Spawn, the effects look like cartoons nowadays. I mean, it looked cool then because you hadn't seen this before. Sort of like weird morphing technology that looks really goofy when you look back at it. The effects do not hold up. I mean, you got to remember, this came out a year before Batman and Robin, which was the Joel Schumacher Batman film that completely killed the franchise. So this is sort of the milieu it was dealing with. And it works in that style, but it is way over the top. And I mean, it hits like 0 to 60 from the beginning. I mean, they give backstory on stuff they don't even need to give backstory on in the beginning. Martin Sheen chews the scenery like crazy as the bad guy. But I still have to say there's a certain enjoyable quality to it, especially if you frame it in the context of it was made with video toasters in 1997. So ultimately, I'm still going to say that Spawn kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Now, the new movies this week is Wonder, which I didn't like, Roman J. Israel, Esquire, which I also didn't like, and The Deuce, Season 1, which I haven't seen. Anyways, that is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Annihilation and Game Night. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.